So today we are joined in our second interview for the morning here on Small Biz Matters on Triple H 100.1 FM. We are talking about, the coronavirus. Well, not so much the coronavirus, but in general, security, understanding, mitigating disaster, knowing and foreplanning for these issues. And we're going to be talking about that with an expert. We have once again Daniel Lukovits joining us on the line. He has been one of our favourite guests talking all about security and IT. And he's an expert when it comes to understanding disasters and controlling them and as best as you can, of course, mitigating those as well. I thought it'd be quite pertinent to bring him on the program and talk about the coronavirus, well, not just the coronavirus, but the issue that it's having on the economy and supply chains and how we as small business owners can be a little bit more prepared. Daniel, welcome back to the program.
Lexi, thanks for having me.
And I understand that you've been caught in another Sydney issue, well, never mind the coronavirus, Sydney traffic. That's enough to bring things to a standstill, isn't it?
Oh, given the choice between a zombie apocalypse or Sydney traffic, bring on the zombies.
So true. So I want to talk to you today about you being an expert when it comes to, I guess, mitigating risk and understanding from a security perspective, but also from a small business perspective, what we can do to understand and foreshadow what might happen, and then what we can do to plan. I'm not going to use the P word. I'm not going to say prep. I'm not going to be a prepper. But I think there's a lot that we can do as small business owners to put things into place to prepare for future issues, and they are upon us now. What would you say is some of the main sectors of the economy that are going to be affected by the effects of a disaster such as the coronavirus, in your opinion?
Okay, well, first of all, I like how you said a disaster such as coronavirus, and we're not actually having an interview about coronavirus. And the reason I like that is because if you've read the media over the last few weeks, and certainly the last few days, you'd think we're all going to die. There were reports earlier this week saying that toilet paper, rice, other supplies were flying off the shelves at supermarkets. And what we're seeing in some respect is essentially the start of a mass panic. But the other thing that can happen to large crowds is mass delusion. And in many cases, that can be fed by media hysterics. It can be fed by disinformation. It can be fed by fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And coronavirus is giving us a good window into that. Now, there is actually some good news, and I'll come back to that. But just having a look at the problem in the first instance, let's see what's happened. If you were following the news over the last 3 to 6 months, well, we dodged World War III. If you remember, Donald Trump was going to start World War III with Iran, and I know that because Facebook told me, and that didn't happen. And then, we've had deadly volcanoes, and that was going to get everything. And then, of course, we had bushfires, and that was going to destroy everything. And, of course, you know, climate change is going to kill us all. And it seems like every single week the media is reporting on yet another massive disaster. And by the way, I think the biggest disaster of 2019 was the movie Cats, but that's another story. The point is, they think that, you know, all these things are going to get us because it's a great way to get clicks on websites. It's a great way to get people's attention. And a lot of people start panicking because of this. Now, this didn't happen 20 years ago as much. There was a song in the 70s or 80s by the Australian band Skyhooks called Horror Movie, and it said that the biggest horror movie was the 6 o'clock news. And it was just talking about people fighting and car crashes and things like that. And yet we look at what's happening today. Global disasters confront us every day. We have a generation of young people who are growing up with major anxiety issues because they actually think the world's not going to be here much longer. And so it really is about panic and so forth. And I think that needs to be divorced from actual reality. Now, what I've seen as a risk professional is an interesting change because 20 years ago, toward the start of my career, it was very hard to sell security. It was very hard to sell risk management. Australia was, and it still is, a fundamentally safe place. You know, there are still people who they'll duck out of the car for a few minutes and they don't lock the car or they don't lock the house. And people didn't sort of have this in the forefront of their mind. Now, then you go to, say, you know, the last decade, and now people are a lot more concerned about it. There is global terrorism. There is a general awareness of it. Now, I think the threat landscape has definitely changed, and it would be naive to assume that all of these threats are non-existent. But I think there is some good news coming out of this, and it goes like this. Coronavirus is probably not going to kill you, okay? Now, there, I said it, I'm staking my professional reputation on the fact that coronavirus is not going to become the next apocalyptic event with which we're confronted. However, what's happening is it's causing people now to start thinking about risk, to start thinking about preparedness, to start thinking about business continuity planning, about disaster planning, about even just a family emergency plan. And these are things that people didn't think about previously. I've seen, you know, in my company over many years, so we sell security systems to homes, to businesses, things like that, and all the time we get people who ring Calamity and say, oh, I had a break-in over the weekend, I need help. And I hate it because they're calling too late, and had we helped them the week before, it may never have happened, and instead we're sort of cleaning up the mess. Now, I've always felt that good security and good risk management is about preventing tomorrow's incident rather than cleaning up after yesterday's.
All right, Daniel. So let's talk about what those risks are on a really practical level and what you think it is. I know that the landscape has obviously changed, but what is it that we can do to mitigate those risks in a really practical sense as a business owner? Not so much preparing our homes or preparing our families, but rather the planning and the preparation, and what exactly does one of those plans look like, and how do you sit down with you and your staff and plan for those eventualities?
Okay, well, let's look at it first at a local, within the walls of the business, and then let's look at it at a more wider community or global basis. Now, at a local level, you're talking about staff. So coronavirus has got people thinking about sanitation, about communicable diseases, about masks, about alcohol hand wipes in the office and workspace. And, you know, again, that's an interesting phenomenon, because anyone who studied the statistics would know that the conventional flu is far more destructive at this stage than coronavirus is. But we've got people who are obsessively washing their hands now when they go to the bathroom because of coronavirus, and yet they weren't doing that 6 months ago.
But we are being told by the medical professionals and those out there who are the head doctors of New South Wales, for example, not to avoid shaking hands for now, just to mitigate the risk. So I do want to say, because we're on community radio now, that we shouldn't be saying that that's the official stance, and we should be upholding that. But it's not something where we have to go into lockdown. Is that what you're sort of explaining?
Right. And look, you'll hear multiple diverse opinions. I was listening to the news this morning, and I can't recall which channel, but, you know, they were quoting experts saying that, you know, we should stop kissing. Now, I mean, I'm not one to sort of kiss people on the cheek when I come to the workplace, but you're getting all these sort of multitudes of opinions, and that's before, you know, we include social media and fake news and the rumour mill and so forth. But if we come back to what we were talking about, how a small business could be prepared. One of the things that we've historically been very bad at in this country is the correct use of sick leave. Now, you know, there's a famous brand of cold and flu medication whose slogan was soldier on, and the idea was that when you're crook, you take this drug and you turn up to work and you just soldier on. Well, you shouldn't be doing that. You should actually be staying at home and getting better rather than going into work where you could potentially affect everyone else. Now, nobody would argue even for a second that a person who'd merely gone on a trip overseas and maybe a suspect candidate for coronavirus, they're not exhibiting any symptoms, they've not been tested, but people would say to them, oh my gosh, stay home, don't come into work. But of course, people who are sniffling and coughing left, right and centre have routinely come back to work. So one of the things that businesses can do at a very small level, the local level rather, is just say, okay, well, you know, if there is an outbreak or if anybody is exhibiting contagion, what is the policy of keeping them away so that this illness doesn't absolutely tear through the landscape? Now, you know, we're very lucky today because thanks to flexible work, thanks to, you know, modern technology, it is actually possible to both stay at home but still be productive if that's what you need to do. And companies need to become very good at this. You know, sick leave needs to be about when you're actually sick, not just when you've had a big night out and you don't feel like going into work. So that's at the very small level how businesses can start looking at this. Now then, when we go to the more macro level, you start having issues, and I think these are going to have a very big global effect concerning supply chain arrangements, both inbound and outbound. So if we look at the impact on Australia, a lot of Chinese businesses, and obviously China is at the epicentre of this current issue, a lot of Chinese manufacturing plants are having problems because, you know, the staff literally aren't turning up. They've been quarantined, they've been put in lockdown, so those factories are not producing anything. You have ports that have quarantine across them. You have, you have flight and travel bans and so forth. So that, given that we now live in a marketplace where an awful lot of our product is manufactured overseas, and certainly in China, if that product is not getting to us, that is going to have a long-term problem. Now, you might be an Australian business. You have no direct exposure to coronavirus. But if your entire business consists of selling things from a market that could suddenly dry up, well, you've now got a problem. And, you know, that goes both ways as well. There are Australian businesses which send goods to places that are now either going to have economic turmoil or they're going to have import restrictions. You know, there's a good recent example, our fish and lobster industry and so forth, of whom Asia is a major consumer, are now facing very, very serious problems because the buyers have just simply disappeared. And so, of course, if you've prepared stock for, you know, a year's normal trade and then that disappears, well, what's going to happen to your business? So companies need to sit down like any form of risk assessment, and they need to go through the worst case scenario and say, all right, well, what could happen? What's the damage that that would cause? And then what's the likelihood of that happening? And once you've got that sort of list of the bad things and you can prioritize them by their likelihood and the impact on your business, you can then say, okay, now let's start working on solutions. And in some cases, the solution might just be to accept it, to live with it. It's not really something that's going to cause you to lose sleep. Other things you could do is you could transfer risk, for example, to, you know, to insurance or to another company or to a supplier or a buyer. Maybe you have some, you know, money in the war chest for a rainy day that you can rely on. If you have a slow year's trade or business dips, you may be able to survive. Or there are other things where you realise, okay, this is a genuine problem and this could be catastrophic to our business. So what are we going to do about that? Are we going to find alternate supply chains? Are we going to find alternate customer markets? How are we going to ride this wave and get through to the end unharmed?
So you're talking to Daniel Lukovits here on Small Biz Matters on Triple H 100.1 FM, and we're talking about mitigating risk, mitigating, I guess, the impacts of something like a disaster like coronavirus. And it sounds to me, Daniel, that what you're explaining is an important part of this is really planning and understanding where your risks are and actually conducting a risk assessment. I would say that small business is quite crap at sitting down and doing risk assessments simply because we put that I'm too busy hat on and we don't sit down with our staff and our experts and maybe our business advisors and look at the bigger picture and what could happen in this scenario. And I imagine there's a lot of small businesses out there who are doing it now. Are we better prepared than big business because we are more flexible and able to pivot with our planning, preparation and mitigation of those risks? Do you think we're in a better position than big business is, Daniel?
Well, there's no question that small businesses can often be high speed, low drag, and, you know, they can stop on a dime and they can change direction and so forth. But whilst I think it's fair to say that a lot of small businesses are, as you say, crap at preparing for this, the same would go for large business and, you know, even government as well. I mean, one of the things that makes me cringe is whenever there's a major terrorist incident in Europe, the next day you see footage of the army being rolled out to protect nuclear bases, and you think, oh, well, that's great because you're responding to yesterday's terror attack. Why didn't you have this security in place previously? You know, and obviously a lot of this stuff is done for show and for the appearance of doing something important. But the nice thing is, these days, emergency management, it's not difficult, and there's so much information out there. And I think one of the things that the government, both state and federal, have done, if you go out looking for it, is they have published an absolute wealth of information on how to prepare for emergencies. Now, the one thing they probably haven't done a good job of is telling people that it's there. But if you just even Google the words emergency planning, you'll see all sorts of very helpful websites that will come up, and they provide things like checklists or just things to get you thinking, because even if you just start thinking about this stuff, the mere act of thinking about it already puts you ahead of a lot of companies. And interestingly, not only can this be just a good thing to sort of keep your company going, it can actually give you a competitive advantage, because imagine what would happen if all of your competitors ran out of stock, but you didn't, because you'd actually thought about this and you'd planned for it. Well, guess what? They're going to die on the vine, and not only could you survive a catastrophic incident or a hazard or an emergency, but you can actually you can actually do really well out of it, and not in a cynical way by sort of trading off misery, but just through effective planning and living through that plan. Now, one of the other things that we can actually learn from government and from big, large-scale emergency planning is something called an all-hazards approach. And what all-hazards means is basically that if you get your emergency planning right, it should actually cover you for most things, including things you haven't even thought about yet. Now, I'll give you a really simple example. We had the large bushfire emergency that was happening a few months ago, and every man and his dog was rushing out and buying masks to assist with, just breathing the air and so forth. So, of course, we fast forward a few weeks later, and now coronavirus is all over the news, and suddenly people actually found they had a supply of masks hanging around the house. Now, you know, if you were to say go nuts and you were to clear the shelves of toilet paper and battery and water and canned meat and everything, and you wanted to have all this stuff ready to go because of coronavirus, chances are you're not going to need it because of coronavirus. That threat will sort of come and go. But you're actually now prepared for the next thing that could happen. It could be something dramatic, a serious biological warfare, a serious disease outbreak, or it could be something more mundane, the water supply to your house gets cut off because of a construction accident. But you're actually prepared to cover for that hazard as well. Now, the problem that a lot of people have in first world countries is that they rely on help only ever being a phone call or the click of a mouse away. So, you know, as I tell every small business, people assume that when they pick up the phone and they dial the emergency number 000, that, you know, the ambulance or the police are going to turn up within seconds and save the day. Well, I've got news for you. That doesn't actually always work. Now, you know, we do life safety monitoring at my business, and we dispatch ambulances all the time, and it's not uncommon to spend several minutes just on hold before you even get through to an ambulance dispatcher. And then, of course, the ambulance has to fight its way through Sydney traffic. So, you know, as the old saying goes, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away. And, you know, the same goes for ambulance or any other emergency service. So I would be saying to people, you need a first aid kit in the house, or you need a defibrillator in the office. You need to know how to use it, because if you think that you're going to dial 000 and that's going to save the day, you're going to be entering a world of pain. So, you know, if you prepare for these things, it actually makes your life really easy going forward. And so I guess the upside of these sort of global disasters is that they at least get us thinking about these things. And hopefully, best case, people actually use this as an opportunity to take stock, to look at their business, to look at their risk, to look at their exposure, and then come up with plans on how to deal with it. The worst thing that can happen is that we all end up with disaster fatigue, and we all go, oh God, not another one, and we just stop paying attention. You know, I was reading a fantastically stupid take on a lot of this, where people were sneering that, oh, this is just Y2K all over again, and remember during Y2K when they told us the world was going to end and it didn't. And, you know, that's a terrible take on it, because what it ignores is the fact that there was so much time and effort put into preparing for Y2K that all of that emergency management actually paid off. I mean, you'll remember the software was rewritten, systems were designed. Even to this day, we still are in the habit of using four-digit dates when we sign forms,
yeah,
rather than you know, two-digit years and so forth. And I mean, that's a now completely unnecessary legacy of Y2K. But you can see the impact that had on society. So, you know, that's the difference between effective emergency planning that, you know, gets us thinking about things that can go wrong and how to prepare it versus just kind of ignoring it and then wondering what the heck happened. Now, I'm not panicking about any of this, but you know what? Do I have a bit of water on standby at home? Do I have some food? Do I have some batteries? Yes, I do, but I always had that. I didn't rush out and, you know, buy those. I mean, at our office, we've got enough diesel to keep our generators running for a considerable amount of time. I've got at least 3 weeks' worth of coffee beans because if the zombie apocalypse happens, I'm going to need that.
That's so, right. You know, yeah, but Daniel, let me just stop you there and just take it back to the practical, because what we need to be doing is thinking about the actually sitting down with ourselves and our staff and taking some time to look at mitigating the overall risk and not just isolating it down on one specific thing. But like you said, you know, having a look at what the risk is to your stock, to your premises, to your health of your staff. I think that tip about ensuring that your staff are actually staying home if they're unwell, not because of, you know, that virus, but because of viruses in general and keeping your staff healthy. And I also like the idea of that maybe now's a good time to sit down and plan for how do your staff members work from home? How do you set that up? Have you got, you know, an effective step-by-step process for simple things like a communication? There's a lot of really great pieces of software out there that can be used remotely that you can implement fairly quickly to get your team working well in different locations. And maybe that flexibility, which should be happening anyway in the workplace, is something that you need to speed up the process of. And maybe this is a good thing because, like you said, it's going to make us all sit down and think about all of those potential risks and actually creating a bit of a plan to mitigate all of those risks, not just one in particular. Daniel, we've come to the top of the hour. You've been a wealth of knowledge once again. Thank you for giving us some really practical strategies that we can implement in our business for disaster response in general, not just for this particular virus. Tell us how people can find out a little bit more about Calamity and what it is that you do.
Thanks, Alexia. It's really great to help listeners. And if anybody would ever like to get in touch, I can be reached via our website, which is calamity.com.au. So the company is Calamity and the website is calamity.com.au, or phone 24/7 on 1300 300 247.
Fantastic. Thanks, Daniel. And thank you, everybody, for joining us with another really jam-packed show. We've got another guest next week coming on and doing more small business education. You've been listening to Alexi Boyd on Triple H 100.1 FM and across the Community Radio Network. This is Small Biz Matters. We'll see you again next Tuesday.